Welcome back to another episode of 50/50. I'm Christopher.
And I'm Charles.
Together, we walk up and down the top 50 and the bottom 50 movies of all time, according to Internet Movie Database, January 1st of 2010.
All right, so want to jump into the good movie first?
I don't know. I feel like we're already halfway into the apocalypse.
No. We'll come back to that. We'll come back to
it. And the movie, too. So
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll start with the good movie. We'll keep our tradition of starting with the good movie.
We're doing The Professional, so you want to read the synopsis for that one?
Absolutely. The synopsis, according to the old IMDb, Leon the Professional. Matilda, a 12-year-old girl, is reluctantly taken in by Leon, a professional assassin, after her family is murdered. An unusual relationship forms as she becomes his protege and learns the assassin's trade.
See, I actually feel like that's a good description. Usually they're way
up. That is a solid synopsis.
I like it. Yeah. All right. And here is the trailer.
Let's talk business. This guy comes to town every Tuesday. Are you free Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm free Tuesday.
You can't stop what you can't see.
This guy came from the outside. He was a pro. He was fast.
In the art of the kill, Leon was the master.
Somebody's coming up. Somebody's serious.
He never missed a hit. He never got caught.
You're indestructible. Bullets slide off you. You play with them.
And above all else, he never had a reason to care. Until now.
I like these calm little moments before the storm.
My family was shot down by DEA officers.
Three kids here. One of them is missing. Find her.
Please open the door. Please.
From the director of La Femme Nikita.
If you don't help me, I'll die tonight. I can feel it.
An innocent girl with no one else to turn to.
What exactly do you do for a living?
Cleaner.
You mean you're a hitman? Cool.
A perfect assassin.
I need you to help me, Leon. I want to get those dirtbags who killed my brother.
With someone to finally believe in.
Change ain't good.
Remember that, Leon.
I will.
They're about to come face to face with the cop who's crossed the line.
Bring me everyone.
What do you mean everyone?
Everyone!
And so that is Leon the Professional from 1994. Charles, how do you feel about this movie? I have some opinions.
Always just throw it out there, just right, bam, bam, bam.
I just want to like throw it out there, just quick knee jerk. You know, if somebody
I have a knee jerk, but I do want to ask, what do you think about the movie? Let's go with that.
I think simply because, for some reason, we've got this Benjamin Button thing going where we're beginning to meet in the middle. I think you may have a kind of a lukewarm opinion of this movie where you're like, yeah, I appreciate it, but like, I don't understand where all the hype is.
This is true.
Am I wrong?
True. Yeah, no, that's true. I don't love this movie.
I
liked it more, I guess, when it first came out. It was kind of the stylish thing, but I just, rewatching it now, it's over the top in weird ways. The earlier scenes where he's, you know, taking out people and all that, it just comes across as really cheesy to me now. I just don't buy any of that. And I feel like a lot of the relationship between Matilda and Leon is kind of rushed. I wanted to see more of that developing. And also, I love Gary Oldman in this movie. He's great. He's really ridiculously over the top. But, I mean, could that person really get away with doing all this stuff underneath the DEA and always wearing the same suit, apparently? I don't get it. Like, it's great, but it is a little too much for me.
Yeah, this movie, I feel like it fits in perfectly in that kind of 90s John Woo violence is ballet kind of thing, where it's like, it doesn't matter whether it's real and believable. Of course, the police have a tripod mounted assault rifle or like machine gun with a like rocket launcher on. Of course they do. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and 200 like, people can't take out one guy. That's right. That reminded me of Blues Brothers. When that's what the ending of Blues Brothers is exactly like that. Except this is not. This is played for seriousness. It's not meant to be a.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
I do. Then I did not, and I still do not understand the fascination with this movie. I really don't. I'm not saying it's bad. It's a perfectly watchable movie, but I don't understand it being on the top 50 movies of all time.
Well,
better than Apocalypse Now. Like what? I don't understand.
Well, embrace yourself because currently it is actually moved up to 31.
That's crazy. Like, there's I don't get it.
What do you think, Benji?
Yeah, what do you think of this, Benj? I'm curious.
Well, it's like, okay, go back and look at an early film by Wes Anderson compared to the film later by later films, you know, like look at Bottle Rocket compared to, I don't know, whatever the long title.
Grand Budapest or something. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And then, but so you see this and it's like the first time you saw a Luc Besson film, for me it was, and I loved it and it was great. And you're right, it has age, but that's kind of the charm of it for me. Watching it again, but it makes me think of like everything else, like The Transporter or the La Femme Nikita, everything else that Luc Besson did, and even the crazy sci-fi one, whatever that the Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Gary Oldman's over the top in that one.
It's like you think. Yeah. Again, so it's like he's just got this universe that he just lives in over and over and over. So.
It's just a
Luc Besson film for me. It's like sits there. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I wouldn't say it's as far as like an important film. It's not.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Certainly wouldn't be more important than Apocalypse Now. You say this is ranking higher than that. In what sense is it ranking? By who?
Well, on IMDb. It's the users on IMDb, but we don't really understand how that works. But basically, Apocalypse Now was number 36, and this was number 35, and now it's moved up. And did Apocalypse Now move down? Was that what we said last time?
I think it might have, yeah.
So this has gotten better with time.
I feel like, too, though, it's... So I feel like if we're going to talk about Luc Besson films, I feel like something like Taken is actually a better movie than this because it just... Because I agree with you. The story with, like, Matilda, the daughter, her family, her home life, what is the relationship with her and Leon, which because it's so rushed, it's kind of left ambiguous enough that you're like, is this some weird relationship that we should feel uncomfortable about? Well, or is this like
there's an international cut. I don't know if you've heard of that. I have not seen it. Mm-mm. But apparently that cut adds in a lot more sexual tension to it.
Well, and see, so like I think that's what makes something like Taken even better though, is it's so distilled, he's just like, no. We're going to take all that out. We're just going to take all the character, all the story out. And it's just going to be just focused. And this is all it's going to be. And that's actually better, in my opinion. Whereas this is like, it's trying to touch on so many things. I almost feel like it is hampered by its scope.
A moral ambiguity in its characters. And that you've got this,
right.
He's a compromised character anyway, and that he's an assassin. Whereas in Taken, Liam Neeson's character is not compromised. Because he's security. He's already a tough guy. He's already a good guy.
Right.
And so it's like, but you're right. This is seedier. This is less filthy. There's a little filth to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because in this movie, it's flipped. The morality is flipped. The cop is the bad one. And the assassin's kind of seen as the protagonist, the good guy in this case.
This one, I feel, falls into the same category as like a Reservoir Dogs or something like that too. Not just in like the time period and the way it looks and feels and everything, but that kind of seediness of like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Do we root for him? Do we not?
I like Reservoir Dogs a lot more than this.
Way more. I'm just saying like it kind of falls into that same world of genre, in my opinion.
So. Yeah, you're right. There were a lot of like, after Pulp Fiction, there were a lot of these kind of 90s action films. I mean, you said John Woo, but not just that. I mean, there were just a bunch of different ones. There were the fast, rapid pace and but I was also going to say, like, I mentioned Gary Oldman, the acting was great. I think all of the actors are good. And this is Natalie Portman's first movie. I mean, she was great. I mean, it's fun to go back and watch it now, you know?
Yeah, I think the kind of tired comparison would be Jodie Foster in Taxi Driver, but like I think that's probably accurate, not only from the performance level, but also from just the character and then the star-making quality of the role, right? Like, I mean, it just catapulted, you know, both of them into the world. But again, it's the same kind of character, right? Who's being rescued by the guy that you kind of don't want to root for, but you know you kind of are rooting for. And the echoes of that movie are very strong here.
You know, it's funny. I didn't consider that when I was watching it, but you're right. This really is a kind of a throwback to it. The kind of lone wolf character that's can't relate to people. Interesting.
If I had been Luc Besson doing an elevator pitch for this movie, I would have been like, oh, it's like Taxi Driver, but, you know, meets Reservoir Dogs. Like, I would have just, like, pitched it that way. And I feel like you could almost just do that.
But that sounds better than the movie we got, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that, too.
That's how pitches go.
That's exactly right, yeah. But I also, I'm not a fan, but I, like, I'm that guy who doesn't like Fifth Element. Like, I know we mentioned Fifth Element a second ago. I mean, it's not bad. Like, I don't hate it or anything. I don't mind watching it. But, like, there are people who love these movies.
I love, as you say, Benji, I love the world building of that. I love the style of the colors, the way it's shot. Chris Tucker, I love, was it Ruby Red, his character name? And he's got the blonde. Yeah. I thought he was great. It's so ridiculous. But that's kind of like the Gary Oldman in this movie. They're just ridiculous characters, but they're fun to watch. So
the Fifth Element in my mind, as far as like sci-fi movies, kind of falls in the, you're right, in the sense that it's got a different flavor to it. It's the Luc Besson flavored sci-fi. it's
French fi.
It's got it's got that same seasoning. So, but it's like it falls in an almost forgettable place in my mind. I again, like Topher says, I enjoy it, but I forget it. And I don't make a point to see it. And I do find it amazing that people will quote the movie, you know, and that's hard for me.
I think Leon, the Get Me Everyone, I think that makes the movie. Like, that's what everybody talks about this one, I think.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, Fifth Element falls for me in a sci-fi category, kind of like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie does, where I also just completely forget about the movie. And then I see it and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of art design. That's a lot of work. What a monumental movie. What a huge task to be so forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially something like Fifth Element, because it was, we're supposed to be talking about Leon, but yeah, Fifth Element, especially because it was so much of it was practical. Like they didn't have CGI the way they do now. And so much of that stuff, it's like, oh no, they built that. They actually made all these places. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think it's just, I feel like he has this directorial style where I can't tell, like, was Leon supposed to be a comedy or was it supposed to be a serious drama, or is it supposed to be a mindless action movie? I really can't tell at times. And the Fifth Element's the same way. Like, that one just is a comedy. Like, there is nothing else there, but it's talking about like the meaning of life in the universe. And it's like, I don't know how you're not Douglas Adams. You're not quite that clever. So it doesn't quite work as well as Hitchhiker's.
I think this one's trying to be a serious drama more than anything else. I don't think it succeeds. That's what I said. Right. It plays a lot of these scenes in a very serious way.
Yeah.
But there is kind of a dark comedy undertone to it as well. So.
Right. And yeah, and there are definitely some scenes where, like the part where she comes home and she sees like her family's all been killed and she walks up to the door and she knocks and she's just like, please open the door. Like that is pretty gut-wrenching stuff. Yeah. I mean, like if you just think about, if you take it out of a movie and make this real, that would be just like, really rough. And it also is like, I also realized that the thing about this movie that's so brutal isn't that it's not, you know, it's not that there's like guts flying around and like, it's not like, you know, torture porn that's so popular now. It's that he's just walking into an apartment and massacring a family, like while listening to like Beethoven or whatever, you know, and you're just like, this is just brutal. Like just the coldness of the brutality is, you know, and it's played again in that kind of like violence as art motif, which makes it almost feel grosser. I don't know how to explain it, but it doesn't, I don't,
it relishes maybe just, violence. It's like,
yeah, maybe we just didn't age as well, but in my brain I'm like, this was enjoyable. Like people found this like fun and like, like they got excited about that. Like, it just feels gross. It doesn't feel.
Our sensibilities have changed culturally too a lot. We're just, I think, and we've all aged.
That's
like
true.
When you're younger,
maybe you have
things in a different way. You're like, oh, you, don't you? Healthier than ever, but
age doesn't necessarily equal maturity. I haven't matured.
You know, it also almost kind of had a feeling of one other movie other than Reservoir Dogs and Taxi Driver kept popping in my head was Boondock Saints. As I was watching it, I was like, this feels like it could fit, like you could do those movies together would make a really good kind of like afternoon screening of like, we're going to watch Boondock Saints, Reservoir Dogs, Leon the Professional and Taxi Driver. And that's going to be like our day. That would be a pretty solid like set, but it would be, I don't know who the target audience would be, but it would, those would all go together nicely. But anyway,
we should do that sometime.
No. So what do we all feel about this movie? Does anybody have anything else they want to throw out there? Does anybody want to go ahead and give like actual,
I'd give it a, I would give it a five or a six, probably a five and a half, somewhere in that range.
Okay. Okay. I was going to give it a seven just for performances, strictly. Oldman and Portman and Jean Renault. Jean Renault did a good job of like doing a really subtle, I mean, he had a lot to work with, right? But I just, he wasn't like some over the top screaming and yelling and crying.
I thought he was great. I think it's cheesy, like, you know, the one man against an army. It might as well have been Rambo.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, I would give it probably a seven just for acting. Strength overall, so
I'll give it a six then. I'll say six.
Benji?
I don't know. I put a number to it? Yeah. Seven.
Yeah, we're doing out of a scale 1 to 100.
It's well made.
Yeah, 1 to 100. Well, and I'm
is the scale 1 to 100?
No, it's 1 to 10.
It's...
He's like, wow, you guys really hate it.
Decimal point. It's all well crafted.
Yes.
Yeah, agreed.
It's well executed. Yeah.
Well, and you should know, that's a pun. Nice pun. No, I was going to say, but you should know that we have a rule here that, like, it's Topher's rule.
Okay. So when I was, I'll just explain.
Go ahead.
The backstory of it was when I was at school, when I was at film school, we had an instructor when we would come in and we'd, like, be presenting our films, and it was our directing instructor. We'd present our films, and his going rule was if you completed your film and it was in focus, you get a 3 out of 10 done, like just because you actually finished your project. Like that was worthy of a 30% in his book. And so that's kind of my floating rule too, is like if unless you're just like screening a portion of your movie that doesn't make any sense, then I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'll give you at least a 3 because you at least finished.
But he project. Has given movies ones before. So.
Oh, because there are movies that I'm convinced they didn't actually finish. Yeah, they just kind of like edited them together and packaged it and got it out there.
Some of the movies on our list, man, you can't believe it is. Well, then the one like last time or a couple times ago, we had to watch Jack and Jill because the movie that was on our list, we couldn't find anywhere. What was it called? It was
the Blair Witch, the Tony
Blair Witch Project. Yeah. We couldn't find that movie. So
shocking.
The Tony Blair Witch Project.
Yes. And so we're like, where do we find this? And how have so many people voted on it to get it in the worst list? I don't know. It's crazy.
I'm convinced people were just voting and they'd never heard of this movie before. They're like, that's funny. Zero. Like, it's bad. Okay, well.
It's amazing that a movie with that title could disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll go with Leon having somewhere between a 6, 7, somewhere in that range, giving it a moderate score. Certainly, I don't think any of us would put it on the top 50 movies of all time, but we're not like totally throwing it out with the bathwater. So a solid film, enjoyable, but somewhat forgettable. All right. Charles?
Ready to move on to the apocalypse?
Oh boy, am I. Oh boy, am I.
All right.
So excited.
All right. So excited. So, synopsis. In this epic disaster film of faith, a mother and father search for their only child as a giant asteroid headed for Earth triggers a series of apocalyptic events. This is the trailer for the apocalypse.
Andrew?
And so that is The Apocalypse from 2007, not to be confused with the apocalypse that was 2020. So sure. what did we all think of The Apocalypse?
Okay, so like I said earlier, this is a religious movie, a faith-based movie. I don't want to offend anybody. I'm not a person of faith. I'm not a religious person. But I don't want to tiptoe around it because Benji, I think it was you that had the quote, or was it Topher? One of you had the quote that said, you know, nobody hates a Christian movie like a Christian.
Oh yeah.
Was that the quote? Absolutely. So I kind of like both of you, like, what, I mean, I want to hear your opinions of it first. And like, and also I'm kind of curious, like, how accurate do you think it is to the Book of Revelations in terms of what it presents?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is a horrific movie. This is a terrible, terrible movie. Like, I don't care. It doesn't even matter what the subject matter is. And it's even worse if it's an important subject matter that's important to you to do it in such a bad way, because it's just embarrassingly bad. Like, the pacing, the story, the script, the acting, the effects,
in that trailer, they show the best part of the movie. So when that asteroid knocks the guy's head off, that was a clean shot. The first sequence of the movie. And the trailer showed that. I did too.
I thought I was like, oh, this is not, oh, it's not supposed to be funny. But it is. It really is.
I had to rewind it a few times and watch it. I was like, did that really happen?
I agree with, this is a terrible movie, but I will stand by my previous statement that nobody hates Christian movies more than Christians. People who go to church can't stand Christian movies because they all know they're bad. Like, they all know that they're bad. That's the reason that nobody ever sees them. And when they do, it's so rare. You know, it's unusual to get good backing, good money, good finance, good talent behind a movie that has a Christian message. And so it is annoying and it's very difficult. And I don't think that statement's really that controversial or offensive to say that I think that's just kind of like, yeah, they're not quality movies generally speaking. And when they are, they stand out, right? Like, that's why something like Passion of the Christ was such a big phenomenon. Was ever, like, you see the crowd that it draws of these like people that are starved for a movie that they identify with or understand or want to see, that's done well and with a budget and a cast and, you know, talent and all that. And isn't that like one of the highest grossing movies of all time? I mean,
at least R-rated ones for sure. I know. Yeah.
I think considering its budget, it's one of the highest rated or highest grossing movies of all time compared to what it costs to make. And again, I think that's just proof that, like, hey, if you made a great movie, there would be plenty of audience for it. He got wrecked doing that. But anyway, all of that to say, most Christian movies are bad, and that's normally just because they don't have the talent and the backing behind it, and that is unfortunate. But this is a prime example of that, in my opinion, a prime example of just not good movie. I don't know. I hope I didn't like go too hard on that, but this is a bad movie. This is just bad. So,
Benji,
you're right. You're right. It is a bad movie. It's pretty bad. And so-called Christian films. I gotta preface this because I don't like the word Christian being used as an adjective to describe the film. And I think that's a crutch that ends up even harming the Christian filmmaker, in so much as you're like, well, okay, I don't think it's a conscious thing. I don't think anybody goes, well, I don't need to know everything about the making of this film because I'm doing it for God. I don't think anybody consciously does it. I think they say, I'm on a mission. I'm going to go do this thing and God's going to take care of these things. And I think along the way, or it's a group effort or, you know, some sort of thing, but it's got this real positive, good, faithful mind think we're going to go into this. And there's just some practical things about filmmaking that get left behind. No, but it didn't. It's just, they're just it's like, I always ask when I'm on a set people like, what are your favorite films? And just start talking. And I've been on not Vindication, which is a show I work on, but on the set of another Christian film, I remember asking one of the filmmakers, one of the driving forces of this film, what their favorite films were. And they were stumped, just absolutely stumped. Like, they want to make a film, but they like shows. They like TV shows. They like this, that. They had things that they liked, but they couldn't sit down and tell you why this film is good or why that film is good. But here they are making a film. And so it's like a drive from, it's a mission from the heart. I think that misses the point. I hate to say, again, I don't want to be critical. I really don't want to be critical of an earnest effort. It's just, you know, I mean, it's the same with, you see this a lot with also like low budget horror films in that sense too. But low budget horror film, because of the genre, can get away with some cheesiness that becomes stylish or that sort of thing. And I guess Christian films, maybe they have that, they have their own brand of cheesiness. But
they're not as concerned with the art of it as they are with the message. Would you say that's true? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how I see it.
Oh,
yeah. It's like, yes, they don't necessarily have to. I mean, I haven't really seen a Christian, other than, like you said, Passion of the Christ, that really tried to have beautiful cinematography and amazing acting. And it's like, it is possible, but it's like, they're concerned with getting their message out. It's,
well, and I think that's part of why it's so embarrassing, is that if you're making a low budget horror movie, you're making it for people who like low budget horror movies, right? Like, your audience is already there. The Christian movies, are they making it for people in the church? Sure. But their hope and thought is people who are not Christians are going to watch this and it's going to convert or change minds or whatever. But normally they're so embarrassingly bad, nobody's going to show them to somebody who doesn't already agree with it, right? And so it'd be like taking somebody who doesn't like horror movies at all and taking them to go see your low budget horror movie. They're going to hate it and it's going to be bad for everybody involved. And again, I think that's an excellent comparison, by the way, though. They are made by a certain group of people for a certain group of people. But if you take it to a wider audience, it just falls apart. And I think, Charles, you're right in that Passion of the Christ is one of the few that does that. But I think the problem is, and I think Benji nailed this too, is thinking of it as a Christian movie is almost, you're right, it's a crutch, because I think there are a lot of movies that fall in that category that maybe you don't think of that way, you know, whether it be something like your Chariots of Fire or something like that, where it's like, is this a Christian movie?
Yes.
Or is this just a good movie that happens to be about people of faith? And can you be both without it having a preachy message? And what does that look like? Then you get into the whole like Apocalypse Left Behind kind of genre, and it gets weird, because then you're getting into this kind of, like you mentioned earlier, Charles, you know, how accurate is to Revelation.
Right.
It's really hard to know, because it's like prophecy, so we don't know how accurate happened yet. So anything that you put on screen is going to look fantastical and probably a little weird and cheesy, even if it's exactly what it's going to look like, but we really don't know. So it's all going to feel very sci-fi kind of, which makes it even less approachable to somebody who doesn't already believe in that stuff. It gets into a mess.
I'll say this, I don't want this to offend anyone, but like, when I watch these movies, I probably have a different mindset than when you guys are watching it, but when I watch it, I almost picture it as like a sci-fi movie, end of the world type thing. And again, I am not trying to step on anyone's faith there, but that's how I kind of see it. Like, in a lot of ways, I like the setup to this movie. It's just poorly executed. You could have done this movie in the same way, same subject matter. And even the ending is kind of ambiguous. They don't really have a... I actually think the ending is pretty strong, because it didn't really go where I thought it was going to go. It just kind of stopped. And so you could have had it both ways, where it's a well-made movie with this overall Christian theme, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, hit the audience in the head with the message. I don't mind, you know, movies about religious things. I love The Ten Commandments, and I love Ben-Hur. Those are fantastic movies. Then there's a message in those too, but that doesn't affect me. And those aren't really called Christian movies, are they? They're just like epics, is in a way. Yeah. I don't know. I know they I show it like every Easter, but
would probably be the term that most people would use.
But I love it. I really, I do love those movies. But a lot of it reminded me of Birdemic, like the quality of it.
And truly,
Bird, kind of the same thing. Like when they get pulled over and the guy's got the gun waiting that's exactly what happens in that movie. So that movie could have been about the end of the world, you know, but it's with birds. So that could have been the apocalypse. Or Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Have you guys seen that one with Steve Carell? For all I know, that could have been a biblical movie too, or a, you know, the faith-based movie. They don't really get into it, but kind of similar things. So
faith is personal. And so it's like, I was reviewing the other day saying, I think some movies, some of my favorite films that demonstrate faith to me are even Hail Caesar, Coen Brothers film. To me, that is a faith-driven movie. We're watching this character's crisis of faith in this movie while he's making a movie about Christ, which is just the Coen Brothers wrapping it up with comedy. Man,
we ragged on that movie. But also, a different podcast. Funny.
But I love it for that. And the more I watch it, I keep going back to it, and I really am drawn to it. But also, Close Encounters of the Third Kind to me is a faith-based film.
Yes,
like Roy knows something that no one else knows, and he has faith in it, and in the end, very literally raptured up. So I think there's a component of anything that if a person is open to God, God will use it. So it's not to say that this sort of film is just a total waste, because God will use it somewhere. That's the faith. But it is hard to watch there. And so many films like this are hard to watch.
Well, I just remembered Contact. I think Contact is
I was literally about to say that.
I love that movie.
If you took one of the like modern kind of disaster end of the world epics, like your 2012 or your whatever, you know, that's a bad example, but I mean, you take something with that kind of budget, that kind of cast, whatever, but you mix it with the kind of like, not moral ambiguity, but that kind of like actual pondering of the eternal mixed with an apocalypse movie, and you could end up with something truly great, right? Like if you think about it, it doesn't involve like cataclysm, but Contact is kind of an apocalypse end of the world movie.
Yeah.
Like if you think about like what would happen if aliens showed up, that would be catastrophic.
But I mean, that is a movie about faith. I mean, they even have that thing where they pretty much kick her off because she says she's an atheist.
Absolutely. You know, that is a fantastic movie about faith. That just like Benji was saying, it's very personal. And what do you believe versus what do I believe? And there's no stone casting of who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong, but there's honest conversations trying to get to the rock. I mean, like if you had that kind of conversation instead of the really stilted, cheesy conversations that were in this movie, you could have, using the backdrop of what's happening and be having those conversations, you could have a really solid, great movie. But again, it doesn't ever come off that way. And I think Benji's spot on is a lot of times the makers of it aren't cognizant enough of what they're doing, right? They're not aware enough of what they're doing and what every decision leads to and all of that to know that like, oh, if we want to actually have a thought-provoking movie, we need to do X, Y, and Z like they did these seven other times. And we need, you know, like it's just, it's an art, it's a skill. And you have to have enough base knowledge of the art form.
We're like Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson's going to make a qualified movie no matter what, because he's a filmmaker. He knows how to make the film. And so in this faith-based component, he makes a qualified film that looks great, that meets all the qualifications, and that is entertaining. And again, he does everything he needs to do to make the film, and he gets his point across, and therefore is maximally effective.
And he's talked about making a sequel to Passion of the Christ, actually, truly. I don't know what where it would take up or what storyline it would follow, but he's talked about that for years.
That would be 40 interesting.
40 days, Acts, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know where you would go from there. That'd be interesting.
But I would say for me, it's like the best, it would be some of those biblical epic films. Those are, like I said, I love the Ten Commandments. And it recently got restored for a 4K release, and it's amazing. Great. But that's a Cecil B. DeMille movie. I mean, you can't really go wrong with a lot of his spectacles, so... But yeah, I love Ben-Hur too. Ben-Hur is amazing.
Ben-Hur is great. I love Ben-Hur. I like Ben-Hur quite a bit more than Ten Commandments.
I do too, but I love both of those movies. They're great. And I even like I even like the cartoon, the Prince of Egypt. I like that movie a lot.
That is a really interesting visual movie. Like the way that movie is animated is really unusual. It's a very good movie, but it has a very unique style to it that makes it stand out. But
it does.
Okay, so our thoughts on faith-based films aside, what did we all think about The Apocalypse?
I'd give it a 4.
I would not be that generous. I would go much lower. I would go much lower. I feel like a 3 has to be the maximum that I can give it, but it's also the floor, so I don't have a choice. I'm kind of stuck there based on my own.
You can break your rule. It's okay.
Well, and so I'll be honest though. I didn't appreciate the ambiguous ending the way you did.
That's why I gave it a 4. That's the truth. That's the 4.
I felt like they copped out with that ending. I was like, okay, like you're not going to give us either an actual resolution or like that for a movie that's trying to teach a lesson, I presume. You didn't really do that. You just kind of stopped before anything was said. So like what's like,
oh man, then you would love Left Behind since you haven't seen it.
Well, I feel like Left Behind, and I don't know, I haven't seen that movie or read the books, but I mean, it's like there's like 33 of those books or something. There's like an enormous number of those books. And I feel like only doing the first one would be sort of like only making Fellowship of the Ring and then being like, hey, it's done. Like, no, you missed some of the story there. So I don't know. I could almost see that one not feeling complete.
Well, like my wife's sister, when she went to see Fellowship, she thought that was the whole movie. Like, and then she's like, what do you mean there's more?
So. What do you mean you thought the story was over? Like, how much? Anyway, yeah, I would give this movie a 3. At the absolute maximum, I would almost want to go lower just because the acting is horrible and the scripting and the blocking and there is truly nothing about this movie that I liked. And even just from a strictly continuity, just understanding what's happening standpoint, the way that people were just rapturing spontaneously throughout the movie was completely baffling because unlike a movie like Left Behind, which I presume, doesn't it like open with literally like the rapture happens and everybody's just gone?
We'll
like
get
that's
there.
How the movie
we'll
starts.
Get there in a second.
All I'm saying though is like this one doesn't do that, right? So like just like one by one throughout the movie, people just start disappearing with no explanation given. Like they never even go into it. So it's just kind of like, I guess people were being raptured. I don't know. They didn't really go into it. It's just people
well,
just
more than the disappearing, like what bugged me was how easy it was for them to get around. They got like a car and they got an airplane all of a sudden that they can just fly across. No problem. It's like boom. Oh,
his
boom,
dog
boom,
got
boom.
Raptured too. Apparently, the guy's dog got raptured at the beginning too, and left behind the collar. Like, what is happening right now? It just—it's totally confusing. It made no sense. So I have very little, very little interest in this being anything more than that. So,
Benji, anyway. What would you say? Benji, what number would you give it?
Yeah, I'd give it a 3. Yeah, I maybe a 2 even. Looking at the people behind it, I'm trying to figure out who's at fault.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm gonna hunt this down. I mean, it's directed by the guy who edited Police Academy 6. So, directed by the guy who edited Police Academy 6.
With those kind of credentials, you know it's quality.
Yeah, like Return to Oz was Walter Murch. You know,
what are you gonna do?
I didn't know he directed that. Really.
Yes.
Wow. Yes.
Edited The Godfather.
Oh, I know who Walter Murch is. I just didn't know he directed that.
Yeah. That's the one with the creepy like rollers when they're like on the wheel. Yeah, that is a terrifying, terrifying movie. No, I think Benji, this may be something where it's like a Agatha Christie like Murder on the Orient Express. They all did it, right? They all killed this one. There's no
right.
There's no one person to blame. It's everyone's fault.
And what is it? Where was it at? It's on the. So it. I don't even think it's on the list anymore in terms of the bottom 50. But the one that we've mentioned a few times, Left Behind, is the current 35th worst movie.
And this is the Nick Cage or the Kirk Cameron?
This is the Nick Cage one. So do you guys want to go ahead and switch to that?
I haven't seen it, so I'm going to do little other than talk
that's cool.
about how much
I'll go and switch to it. Let me read the synopsis here. It's a small group of survivors are left behind. There's the title and the thing. After millions of people suddenly vanish and the world is plunged into chaos and destruction. Doesn't mention anything about faith or the apocalypse. Interesting. Here we go.
Hi, Mom.
Chloe, welcome home.
So is everything set for Dad's surprise party?
He got called into work.
Can I buy you a coffee?
I'm waiting for someone. My dad.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hey.
Welcome aboard PanCon Flight 257 to London. Flight time today will be 6 hours and 30 minutes.
I love you.
All over this plane have simply vanished.
Chris, let me in! Chris!
Free me!
I know you all want answers, and believe me, so do I, and I'll do my best to get them.
I heard some doctors talking. It's not just here. It's all over the world.
One of these days, the sky's gonna break.
Chloe, are you okay?
Yeah, Mom and Raimi, they're both gone.
One of these days, the mountains are gonna fall into...
No!
Irene knew this was coming, the way it happened. How could she know that?
He took them to protect them from the darkest time in the history of this world.
About would never do something like this.
We all have a right to know if we're gonna die.
No, we're gonna die.
I have no spoilers, no flaps, no elevators, and if I run this thing dry, no reverse thrust. I need some room. I just really need you to know how much I love you, no matter what happens.
Dad?
Like the end of the world.
One of these days the sky's gonna break and everything will escape and I'll know.
So that's Left Behind, starring Nicolas Cage in what is sure to be a highly memorable role for him in a highly memorable career. Gentlemen, I have not seen this film. What does everybody think of this film?
Well, I don't think Benji's seen it either, right?
I didn't see it either.
Good. Sorry, Charles.
Not a believer is going to talk about the Christian movie.
You're fine. You're fine.
I wanted to say, though, earlier I said Surviving Christmas in reference to the Kirk Cameron movie. I just want to clarify that or critique myself. And let's say that that's actually the Ben Affleck movie and James Gandolfini crappy Christmas movie. The Kirk Cameron one is actually called Saving Christmas, and it's Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas. So... We made mistakes here. Kirk Cameron's Saving Christmas. That just shows you how arrogant that movie is and how he is a filmmaker. So I watched the Nick Cage version and I watched the Kirk Cameron version.
Wow, just you went deep.
I did. Yeah, deep. Because I wanted to see the comparison, what they're like. And you may be surprised to find that I don't hate either one of these movies. It's interesting that... At least, like, the looks you're giving me. I look at these, the setup is kind of like a sci-fi movie, people disappearing. There's lots of things that do that. I mean, Lost did that. And then there's, like, was it the 4400 and all those type of things. There's all kinds of things they could do that could be faith-based, apocalypse, whatever. But it's interesting, especially when you compare the two. So I'm really going to talk about both of them. Roughly, they're the same story, which is to say that it's a... it follows a reporter and an airline pilot and the pilot's daughter. Essentially, they're the three main characters, and they and the apocalypse happens when the pilot is flying. The pilot and the reporter are flying to London, and that's when it happens. The rapture happens, and so people disappear off the plane and all that. And but it's interesting because the Kirk Cameron one goes more, from what I understand of Revelations and all that, it goes more into that. It starts talking about like a global currency is happening and there's 7 days of peace. And And I even like the ending of that one because it actually gets into the Antichrist, and it kind of has like this sort of a twist surprise ending setting up the next one, which I didn't watch yet. So it was interesting, but it was cheesy and the dialogue was terrible and it was poorly made in a lot of parts, but it wasn't terrible and it wasn't as in your face as Saving Christmas was. I hated that movie.
Well, that was like a documentary. That wasn't even like a story to that.
Well, sort of. Whatever it was terrible. And I don't like it when those movies come off as arrogant, like they're talking down to you, and like, you know, that's how I felt that movie did, and that's those kind of movies I just hate. But this movie, like I said, I think it's got a cool kind of interesting story. You want to see where it goes. But the Nick Cage one. So the Kirk Cameron one, it happens while they're flying, and then they decide to turn around and land back, and it, you know, goes back to all the story about Israel and all these things going on with the Antichrist. The Nick Cage one, the plane does not turn around, and it tries to, but then it instead, you know, almost hits another plane, and they're running off fuel, and the whole movie is basically about it trying to get back before it kills all the remaining people on it. So it kind of does a Last Jedi kind of thing where they're seeing if they're going to run out of fuel. So, and if you know me, you know that I hate The Last Jedi, and that's a terrible plot for a Star Wars movie. And so actually, I like the Kirk Cameron one more. But and also the Nick Cage one, even though it doesn't get into the particulars, like this of the Antichrist and all that, it is more offensive in its portrayal of non-believers. Because essentially, on the plane, they have all these stereotypes of what I presume Christian stereotypes are of people that don't believe, like, or you know, are sinners or whatever. You've got a drug lady that's shooting up heroin in the bathroom. She doesn't get raptured. You've got a Muslim man that doesn't get raptured, which is like, oh my God, but really, this is what we're doing? You've got all kinds of different people like that. A guy that's clearly putting like money, he's greedy, that stuff, he's not raptured. You've got a black woman who's raising her child alone. I don't even know what sin she's supposed to have committed, but she's on there, and she's got a gun for some reason on the plane, which is, how does that happen? This movie was made in 2014, for crying out loud. Anyway, for some reason, I don't know if this is, I'm going to use the word, I don't know if this is offensive, but there's a midget on the plane, and for some reason, he's not raptured. And then I'll explain why. He's a jerk. They make him out to be this huge jerk, but...
Well, that's why. Because he's a jerk.
He's a jerk. And
he's a little jerk.
Nicolas Cage doesn't get raptured because he's thinking about cheating on his wife, even though he hasn't. His daughter doesn't get raptured because I guess she doesn't agree with her mom's religious teaching. It's just... But so that's where it gets offensive. Like I when I was watching that, I'm like, oh my God, they're hitting on all these like stereotypes. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they showed like a gay couple in the back or something, just where they were going with all the stereotypes. Because the Muslim man was really, I was like, the Muslim, that's really, they're gonna attack that. Okay. And speaking of the midget, it was getting into spoiler territory when they finally do crash land the plane. You know, they throw out the rubber like stairs or whatever to blow it up. And they're very calmly, like, trying to get everybody... Well, calmly. She's being as gentle as she can, trying to get him out the thing. And the midget comes up, and she just picks him up and tosses him down. Like, for real. It's like, what did he do? So, and they don't explain it.
They're doing dwarf tossing.
Yeah, off seriously. The they just, like... He just comes up to her, and she just tosses him down. And they... I don't know if it's supposed to be funny. I don't get that kind of humor. I mean, I laughed. So, is that terrible of me?
It's just a Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah,
it's just weird, like a Nicolas Cage movie.
You know, in this one, he's not over the top. I don't hate the acting of this movie. I mean, you got Leah Thompson's the mom. I'm surprised at some of the quality of the acting. And there are some cool things, like in Nicolas Cage's version, like he's flying and he can't reach anybody on radio. And the reason he hits another plane is because he sees another plane on his radar coming at him. And he's able to like see it, and he sees there's no pilot in the cockpit. And I thought that was pretty cool, except I would assume autopilot would help somewhat. But anyway, but it's still kind of a cool thing. Whereas the, like I said, the Kirk Cameron one, they're like, okay, we're turning around. And the very next scene, they're at the airport. It's like, well, okay. So again, but the Kirk Cameron one's kind of interesting in a lot of different ways. But yeah, so the Nicolas Cage one, the ending is kind of the worst part of it in a lot of ways, because he's got a crash land. He's running out of fuel. He can't land anywhere. And so his daughter somehow, I forget exactly how, like, the reporter has a satellite phone that's able to reach the daughter. And so she literally, there's like this highway under construction that she's able to take a truck that she finds and smashes through all the construction part of it, takes it, and that dies. And then she gets a bulldozer and runs the stuff off. And she's like basically making a runway for her dad out of all this stuff in like a matter of minutes. And it's like, okay, so she can do this and this and this. She can drive all this equipment. And then he needs a big signal. So she's like, does a huge explosion that he sees. And it's so bad, the ending. And then, you know, it's the dad and her and the stewardess that he thought about cheating with. They're all standing there. And it kind of ends like a big action movie where just like it's the three of them with the fire and the plane behind them. And it kind of does a long pan out. So they don't really answer anything either. Except I feel like the apocalypse movie, they were content with their ending. That's what they were going to do. I assume they didn't make a sequel, and I assume they're not going to make a sequel to the Nicolas Cage movie. I don't know, but it's, I don't hate it. Again, I just, the stereotypes in this one, I mean, even in the Kirk Cameron one, they didn't get into the stereotypes like that. And Kirk Cameron's character actually wasn't a super religious person. I thought that was kind of interesting. So he's the one they're actually having to convince about it.
So I haven't seen either of these movies, obviously, but I want to go back to something you said a second ago about how you said you kind of see them like sci-fi movies, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting thing because, you know, there's always, everybody always talks about the push and the pull between science and religion and faith and science and all this stuff. And so it's kind of, I would say that science fiction is to science as apocalypse, revelation, end times is to Christian faith, right? In that they're just both logical extensions of what you already believe in the here and now. It's just, if you just take the next step, what are you foreseeing? And so they're both going to kind of have echoes of each other, right? Like, how many people saw 2001: A Space Odyssey? I think even the Catholic Church gave him an award for talking about man's communing with the divine or something like that for 2001: A Space. You know, like, there's, I feel like that those two are going to feel similar because they're covering similar topics just from the opposite perspectives, right? And so I don't know. That's a really interesting point that you make, that it feels that way because they're kind of treading in the same territory just from two different perspectives.
Well, and like I said, I didn't want that to offend anyone because it's like, I feel like I say that I'm like trashing on religion, and I'm not. Like, I'm just saying that's how I approach it. So if it doesn't talk down to me, I'm generally okay with it. Like the Saving Christmas movie I hated for that reason. And also, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but a movie like God's Not Dead, I couldn't stand that movie because it was very like tone deaf, and it was, you know, the way it talks, like people that don't have the faith in that movie, they're like the bad guy in it, so to speak. So right. I don't know.
And I think that's, again, that comes back to that whole, like, who is your audience? Is your audience that you're trying to make this for the church to watch? Or are you trying to make this to get people who aren't in the church are you trying to change minds? Because you're going to have to, it's going to be hard to do both with one movie. Like, I don't think you're going to be, it's, I don't know. That's going to be a tough sell, but yeah.
So Benji, do you have any thoughts on what I said? Like, as far in terms of, do you think you're going to seek these movies out now?
Yeah. No, I remember the Kirk Cameron one and okay. But I think the Left Behind, the Nicolas Cage movie, I'm going to go on a limb and say it was not idealistically motivated, like, or altruistically motivated. Like, they weren't on a mission. Like, this movie wasn't out. Like, the reason you didn't enjoy it was because it tried to be platitudes. Charles was saying, like, as far as like the stereotypes. Okay, well, there's going to just kind of mayonnaise everything. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. I may not be speaking to that point, but I don't know that the Nicolas Cage movie. I have it on right now. I have it playing. I'm kind of skimming it or watching it. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, it's like so many things Nicolas Cage, it's probably just made, it's like a soup were they like, okay, well, we've got funding and what do we know would work? Oh, well, hey, this has got a name brand to it. It's going to make at least this much money. And, oh, hey, you know what? And it's probably goes back to box office in China. Let me see.
Well, and I think I read that Nick Cage did it because his brother loves the books, and I think that's how he got involved. Somehow, I don't know. That's his brother is like Catholic, and I don't know. So you say it's fishy? Well, I mean, is there a role that Nick Cage turns down? I mean, geez, he's in everything. He pops up, and by the way, we've talked about him on the podcast a few times. He can be a great actor, truly.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But he can also be the worst of the. Like, were you in the episode, Topher, where we talked about Vampire's Kiss?
Can't remember if I was in that one or not.
Oh, you would remember that. Have you seen that movie?
No, I don't think so.
Seek out Vampire's Kiss. I think it's like 1988, where Nicolas Cage, you know, believes he's becoming a vampire, and he may or may not be.
I feel like that sounds absurd.
That's the one. That's the one where he eats a roach and he really truly did it. He was like that into the thing. He's like, I'm gonna eat a roach for real. And
so, do we think? So really, truly, do we think that Nick Cage is aware of what he's doing? Like, is he purposely giving it? No. And I mean this very seriously, because he is fantastic in some roles. And is that just because a stopped clock is right twice a day? And when he is right for a role, he is really right for that role. But the rest of the time, it comes off really cheesy. Like, is that where he's at? Or is he just somebody who is like, or is he like Marlon Brando, where he's becoming a more exaggerated version of himself as he goes on?
No, because again, Vampire's Kiss is the most exaggerated Nick Cage ever. And that was early in his career. But what I think it is, honestly, I've always said that to me, movies are, it's like music, right? And so a lot of it comes down to your director, because maybe the actors can't hear themselves singing. They don't know if they're off key, and the director has to be able to listen to that and see what it's right with it. And I think in a lot of movies, Nick Cage is just allowed to run free, sing off tune all he wants to, and then hope it works. Whereas in other movies, they like really are able to like hone him in and get a great musical performance out of it, so to speak. So like for instance, in Adaptation,
that movie's fantastic.
He's great in that. And you know that, he's so good that, you know, movie. That director is, who's the director of that one?
Mike Jones.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. You know that, and Charlie Kaufman and all that, you know that they plan that out. They know who they wanted. They wrote it to his style. Same thing for like Leaving Las Vegas and all that. I mean, these are great movies like that. And that we'll talk about Leaving Las Vegas at some point, I'm sure. But these are movies that you know they fit him and that he can do it. And you know that he may have had some ad-libbing here and there, but he wasn't allowed to just run free and be Nick Cage craziness. Where again, like Vampire's Kiss, he fought them to let him act the way he did. And it killed the director's career after that. The director, I don't think he made another movie.
You know, I do wonder then if it's not even so much. I wonder how much of it is having a great director. And I'm sure that's helpful, right? Having somebody kind of rein him in and control it and everything. But I also wonder, because the ones you're mentioning that he's great in have really, really well-developed characters for him to get into. Whereas if you don't give him that kind of structure to work within, he just turns into the Nick Cage, you know, just, it's like, that's his like default. I don't know what to do, so I'm going to scream, you know? And it's like, okay, well, let's tone it down. Like what would it,
but even
you know,
like I keep going back to Vampire's Kiss. Like there's a, you know, the scene where they use the cockroach, but there's another scene where he recites the alphabet and it's like, is he going to keep going? He gets up on it and he's doing this weird British accent that he just decided he was going to do for the movie, but it's not really British. It kind of goes like between like Valley Girl and like British. And he's at his therapist's office and he just like stands up on a chair and he's like, A, B, C, D. And he literally goes through the whole thing for like, what are we talking about? He's talking about like filing stuff in alphabetical order and he decides to do the alphabet. You can't tell me that was in the script. It's just him jumping up and being goofy.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic in that scene.
But it does make you wonder about something like, I don't know, and but like so many of his newer movies, right? Maybe in your Left Behinds, your Mandy's, your what's the new one? Willy's Wonderland, is that what it is?
Yeah, and like, then there's Color Out of Space.
Color Out of Space, but I feel like Color Out of Space may not have been quite as over the top as the other ones were. But I just, it's
Mandy's pretty wild.
That's what I'm saying. Mandy's pretty out there, and it just I wonder how much of that is now he's leaning into it, right? Like, he's kind of doing the Marlon Brando thing where he's like, I can just go sit on set and play in the mud over here and nobody's going to say boo because I'm Nick Cage. This is what I do. I'm crazy. You know, like, is he kind of leaning into that
Oscar
now?
Oscar winner Nick Cage. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it would be interesting to see if he could pull kind of a renaissance, right? Where he could like really, truly, like if some really talented independent filmmaker came along and had some really meaty role for him, and he could just knock it out of the park.
Like Tarantino. If Tarantino could write him a part like he did John
Travolta or something. Yeah, but see, I feel like Tarantino's gotten to that stage too where he's just kind of, I don't know. I feel like he's gone downhill, in my opinion. Just I'm losing interest in Tarantino's stuff these days.
Well, he says he's only going to make one more movie, so. So, Benji, are you still skimming through the...
Nicholas Cage that.
Are you still skimming through the movie?
Something I've noticed here is that this Left Behind movie is entirely financed and produced in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And so that tells you that there's a lot of money. It also has 11 executive producers. And so there's a lot of financing behind this, and probably every decision regarding the making of this movie was a financial one and not a creative one based on the choice of director as well. And a lot of Nicolas Cage himself is a corporation, and he's a Louisiana corporation. And so he can literally buy the tax credits off the movie. And so his participation in a movie can save a movie up to like 30% off the budget if it's entirely based out of Louisiana. I'm not making this up. This is how my TV show works too. So Louisiana has a great thing going. I don't know if it's still going now, but Nicolas Cage is a Louisiana entity. This movie had a $16 million budget. It opened in the United States, made $14 million opening weekend in the U.S. It only made $14 million total gross in the U.S. Its gross worldwide was $27.4 million. So... after prints and advertising, did it make money? No, but I bet every single person involved in the financing of the movie made their money back because that's the way it works in Louisiana. And that's probably how this and then some other, if it's a Nicolas Cage movie and it's based out of Louisiana, it's probably run the same way.
Yeah.
And
that's so funny.
So money probably motivated the making of it.
Yeah. Which I think goes back to your point exactly, Benji, that it's, you know, what was the motivation? So you're, again, how much are you going to really put into, we need to make a really complex story with deep characters and world building and all this, if that's your motivation. Whereas the Kirk Cameron one, they were trying to get it right. Right.
Yeah.
Like they may have missed, but they were at least trying to get it right.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and I haven't, like I say, I'm just skimming this one. I have seen the Kirk Cameron one. And while it's not a great movie, it's a whole movie.
Yeah.
It's a whole, I mean, in my opinion, it's a whole thought. It's certainly not as bad as Apocalypse or a lot of the other Christian films that have been made. But it's not, this is perhaps better made quality wise, but I don't know. I mean, based on what you're saying, the story just, it ends there and we're not traveling on. I don't know. And I haven't read the books, but it just, I don't know. I'm also not listening to it, so I can't comment on it, but anyway, good talk.
Well, that's what we brought you here for, right?
That's right. Yeah, insight.
any movies or TV shows you want to plug, Benji? Of your own? I don't know
anything right now. Ghostbreakers. My show Ghostbreakers and is on Tubi now.
Hey,
there you go.
Finally, okay. It's somewhere.
Nice.
That's. He's shaking his head on his own pluck here.
I know. Why is he shaking his head?
He's like, watch Ghost.
No, it's actually.
Or don't.
I've been putting it on. I'm surprised. It's refreshing to see again after all these years. It's funny.
Well, yeah.
it's there, and that's it. I'll have something to promote in the future. I'm gonna get back together real soon. Kim and I are planning something.
Okay.
All right. Very good. Very good. Well, so next time, whether it be all three of us or just me and Charles,
what are the movies? I don't even know.
The number 34 best and worst movie of all time, The Wild World of Batwoman,
yes,
and Citizen Kane. You pick which one's the good and which one's the bad. But
speaking of VHS, I have the VHS of that, and I watched it like 10 years ago. Though that's true, The Wild World of Batwoman. Yeah, I do have that movie. Micah and I watched that at his house about 10 years ago, so or more. So anyway,
so excited.
Yeah.
So those will be our next movies: The Wild World of Batwoman and Citizen Kane. Certain to be riveted by both.
I'm surprised Citizen Kane is not much higher on this list.
Right?
What's up with that?
It's above Leon. Like, what is happening?
Why isn't that in the top 10? Or five, even? What is that? Okay, all right.
The People's Choice Awards. What is happening over here?
It's the internet. The internet decided. And, the number one movie is Fatburger. But,
Fatburger is delicious, though. I love Fatburger.
Fatburger is good, but it's not the best filter. Wild World of Batwoman and Citizen Kane, though, being paired together is dragging down Citizen Kane.
Well, it's only paired together in our podcast. Like, no one else thinks of these movies together.
No one else has ever put those two movies together.
Right. I used to think of it as like a versus, like a battle, and it's like, it's not. But it is. I mean, because really, what did I say? I said Leon was like a five, between a five and a six for me, and then I gave Apocalypse a four. So, but it's
true. You did. You did.
But it's like what Roger Ebert said. Everything is relative. Like in that genre, it's relative. You know, it's like when I love a horror film, I'm not saying it's as good as like a Citizen Kane.
All right. Very good. Very good. And as always, you can look for all of us, all of the shows on Facebook, listen to replay on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, all the places. You just got to search for 5050 IMDb. And of course, you can find all our podcasts at itsjustawesome.com. So however you want to watch, listen, enjoy, please do so. All of our shows we're proud of. So yeah, you should go check them out. They're good.
You said that with a question. What is that? Are you way to pitch it?
I'm pitching it the way Benji pitches. I'm learning from the best.
Very
go watch my stuff. I don't know. Go. I guess
he just shook his head. He didn't actually have to say he didn't question our quality. Yeah. All right. Good talk.
We'll call it, Charles.
All right. Bye, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.